the Social Fishing Members Podcast, your exclusive access to freshwater content. Welcome everybody back to another Members Podcast ep. We are here for the 25-26 cod season. This is our first Murray Cod Chat of the season. Now, I went on the most insane fishing session for cod opening I've ever had. I have never had one, a cod opening like that, or two, a cod session quite like what we experienced. Sometimes you wonder whether it was just complete coincidence or if there was a reason for things happening, but we're going to discuss it in detail. Now, I've got Jordan on, mate. Thanks for joining me for this chat.
Thanks for having me. Good to try and get to the bottom of what we just experienced.
Yeah, so Jordan, myself, Matt, Logan, and then we took the iFish crew as well. So we went for a fair big session. There was a lot of different things happening on the float. We fished the Upper Murray River. Now, Jordan, you are new to our team. You write for the Upper Murray region. So Jordan's jumped on because he wants to help and share. For anyone who wants to travel and fish the Upper Murray area, the best thing is it is a phenomenal place to travel and fish. Great place over the summertime when it's warm. You know, there's a couple of caravan parks, there's reserves, swimming, fishing. The fishing is consistently pretty good. Obviously, if the flows are up, it's a little bit tougher. But it is a very, very good fishery. It is up there with one of the best, I can't think of a cod fishery river-wise quite like the Upper Murray. And there's two conversations for us to have. One is why the fish are so good up there. You know, you've had fires go through. It's sort of a tail race. It's got a lot of cold water. It fluctuates a lot, which most of the time is not good for fishing. But they've obviously got enough food and enough cup. There is so many fish and huge numbers of fish in that system. And I'm not too sure why, because it is quite a cold river, or maybe the cold helps them. So something I want to really knuckle down. Maybe it seems like there's a lot of fish because they are incredible lure fishing targets, whereas you've got other river systems that might be a little bit dirtier, and it might have twice as, like I'm thinking the Bidgee, it probably holds more fish because it's a bigger waterway, but they're just not as accessible for lure fishing just because of the way the river is designed, how clear it is, how they feed. Anyway, the second thing we're going to talk about is why this bite was so insane. So if you're ever going to fish the Upper Murray, this will obviously help you a lot. But if you're never going to fish the Upper Murray, but you want to learn about cod in general, we're going to try and work out what caused this incredible bite, which we'll see, can it be replicated in other river systems? And it's just about their behavior and what happened during the trip. So Jordan, can you just run us through what a typical session looks like, you know, around that summertime for cod, how many would catch on a typical session, what the river is like, set the scene so then we can talk about what actually was the conditions in the lead up to the session that we did.
The river up here, it's very unique. I don't think there's many other fisheries, especially cod fisheries, like it, just with water clarity and just the fluctuations in river height and how quickly it can change. During the middle of summer, when the river gets low and clear, there's places where you get up to 4 meters visibility, which I don't know of any other rivers that will get that clear. A typical day, say we do, say 12 or 13 hours on the water. A standard day for us is sort of 25 to 35 fish, generally anywhere. They can range anywhere from 40 up to over the meter mark. Average size is 50 to 60 in that sort of range.
So a typical summer session is like, you know, good weather, good warm summer day, and like a good flow, like a slow or medium flow, not a high flow. That's there's flows where you won't bother fishing. You'll just wait for it to come back down, typically.
Because the river up here, it's not classed as an irrigation river. A lot of the water comes in from obviously snowy releases from when they generate power. So the river up here, like a lot of other tail races, won't run high in cold all summer. It'll be up and down. Sometimes it'll come up or down 3 or 4 times a day, depending on what power they're generating through the snowy.
Right. Do you reckon that's actually one reason as to why it's a better tail race, let's say, like in bunny ears for those listening? It's not a typical tail race because the fish get reprieve from the cold flushes. But to me, that would just throw them out. Like, you know what I mean? Technically, if you think about consistency being the key thing for cod, that should throw them out. And it does throw them out, doesn't it? It throws them out once that change hits, but then they adapt pretty quickly, like within half a day to a day. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, they'll obviously, well, we noticed it even on our last float when the river came up, the fish shut down for a few hours, but they very quickly sort of adjust to that and start feeding again. And I wonder if a lot of that is to do, and that's why they're so visual feeding up here and why they're willing to chase lures so far, just because the river heights are always changing. They can't sort of settle in on one spot. They've got to be able to move and, yeah, chase food further than what most cod will.
Have you found that it usually takes half a day to a day for them to settle again? Like, what's the typical, like, I know we managed to catch them the other day, but on a session you've been on, because I've done one, I did one a fair years ago where I had a proper good rise of about a foot. It's the only other time I've actually fished it with a solid rise, and they did not bite. Like, the rise come through at like 11 o'clock and they didn't bite the whole rest of the day. It was like dead because it was a real good flush of cold water. Yeah. Have you had that happen before?
Generally we do try and avoid fishing it either a rising or falling river, but yeah, sometimes when you're out on the water and it hits you, you just got to deal with it. But yeah, it does, we generally find it does shut the fish down, but yeah, by that next morning, if the river's still stable, they'll be back to where they were.
So the day, that's what we had the other day, was the fact they came back on within 4 hours was the quickest you've seen them come back on before?
Yeah, normally they won't switch back on, like, and especially when the water clarity drops so much. Once that water rose and it clarity dropped, I didn't expect to really get much after that.
Okay, so that's a typical scenario. We're going for this cod opening session, so you're like pumped, I think the week before, and you're like, oh, there's a bit of rain coming, which could cause a bit of a dirty water coming down the Murray. It rained a bit. It definitely added some dirtiness to the river. It did jump up a little bit. So we knew the clarity was your worry coming into the trip, wasn't it?
Yeah, clarity up here is the biggest thing. Generally, if the clarity is no good, the fish aren't happy.
And that was our only issue was, you know, is the clarity going to be good enough? Because the river was flowing pretty low. You were pretty keen. And you checked the clarity after the rain, the day after the rain, it was still like a meter and a half. And then I think the next day you checked it and it come back to like a meter. Which was good enough for a cod opening session.
Yeah. Anything a meter or more is, yeah, I'm happy to fish in that. Sometimes I think up here the clarity might go too far and it gets too clear. The fish just become too spooky. Mm-hmm. So yeah, a little bit of color in the water doesn't. I'm more than happy to go and fish in that.
Okay, and then tell me what happened as we pulled up that evening and what was happening with the river levels right throughout that afternoon before our session and the weather forecast for the opening day.
Well, I think when you rang me, I went out to meet you in the pouring rain, which was fun for a cod opening session. It was pouring rain, and of course, as always, the snowy was letting a heap of water go out of Cancoban all of a sudden, which, yeah, seeing the river come up, the 250 to 300 mil within a matter of hours while we were there.
Good stuff.
Yeah, it was good. And as for the weather, for opening day, that was the worst cod weather I think we could have had. There was snow on the hills not far from where we were fishing, rained all day, was windy, was cold. So yeah, no, everything was against rubbish.
Barometer was terrible. The temperature was cold. It wasn't like rain, like summer rain. It was cold rain. It was, I wore a jump, like two shirts, jumper and a big jacket all day and was not hot. I was hot once when I was trying to unsnag a fish, but other than that, it was not hot at all. Yeah. It was probably got to 15 degrees or 16, but there were some times during the day where the rain comes through and the wind and it would have felt like 10 or 9 or 8 easily. For periods. So, all right, that happens. You get a cold snap, and the cold snap started the day before, like the cloud rolled in all day the day before. So it's a full day of no sun on the water. And then the day we fished, pressure was rubbish. Flows had just risen. Temperature had crashed. Temperature had gone from 16 and a bit in the morning, so by the arvo it would have been hotter, to 14 and a half, and then 14 the day we pushed off. And 16 or a bit over, a couple of days prior to that was the warmest that it got for spring. So we hadn't even seen a real good warming trend in the spring at all, and it just crashed back to 14. So everything lined up to tell me, if I was to go, yeah, that, put that and put that, all that together, I'd say it would have been trash. Like, I honestly thought pushing off, I know this river fishes really well, we should get a few fish. What did I say to you? I think we had, you had your mate Logan in his tinny, you had you and Matt in the boat, and I had Paul and I filming a show. So we had five lures going in the water, which is more than two. Like, that's a lot. Yeah. But I think I said to you in the morning, pushing off, or the night before, didn't I say, oh, 30 fish between all five of us would be really, really good, but we were a bit worried we'd even get that. Like, I was...
Yeah. Yeah, no, I was very skeptical. I was thinking pushing off that maybe if we had got 20 fish between all of us, it would have been a successful day. The one thing I was had a little bit of hope was if the clarity wasn't terrible. If the clarity was, yeah, it was terrible on that first day, I would have nearly written the day off.
Mm. And it probably goes to show that clarity is the most important, because it's the only condition that actually held on for us on that session. So anyway, we push off. The morning was pretty slow. I think you're a solid 40 minutes in, 45 minutes in. And I think I've come up to you and you'd had a bump or two and you were like, oh, this is slower than I would have hoped or expected. And you're like, this is going to be a tough day. Do you remember that when we caught back up to you?
Yeah, I reckon it was, yeah, it was nearly close to an hour before we even looked like getting a fish in the boat. So, yeah, so, I thought that's how the day was going to go from there, same as that for the rest of the day.
So skip forward to the end of the session, because everyone, we'll talk about what happened. Skip forward to the end of the day. Paul and I filmed a TV show, which is not the easiest thing to do. Lots of stopping and starting, lots of filming, lots of different things. So we didn't fish a whole heap. We got eight fish between us. And I think it was only, it was, would have been 9:30 in the morning at one stage. You and Matt had 14 between yous all, I think. And they just started coming in real quick through that early morning period after that first hour. We ended up with 60 fish for the day. You and Logan and Matt got 50 fish. We got eight. If Paul and I fished properly, we could have got 20. So, you know, there could have been potentially 70, 75 fish for the day. It was stupid. You dropped, you guys, between us all and you, we probably dropped over 100 fish. And we were going at camp that evening and all throughout that afternoon. We're like, why? Like, why did these fish bite not only well, but better than what they would typically bite in? So what's your thoughts been over the last little bit? Because you've now done, we did that day. And then wait, the following day we got 25 fish. Conditions changed though, because we had another rise come through. So we went, we had another rise of another 20, I think it was another 20 centimeters or 25 centimeters push through.
Yeah.
Which is like another wall come through, and with that came a heap of dirty, like a lot more dirty water, and the clarity went down to about, what was it, a foot maybe?
Yeah, 40 centimeters? Half a meter at most, I reckon.
And it had a lot of that cloudy, you could see the sediment like bubbling up through that where the flow was. Yeah. And we caught 25 fish, which even for a massive rise, a temperature drop, rivers at a punt, like the river was pumping, like you couldn't effectively fish. The fish had to be hungry to eat because our lures were nowhere near them. Like the lures were washing through, and the fish still, we still caught 25. So one, that was the highest. Is that the highest you've ever fished it?
We did. I reckon I did one float very similar last year. The river was probably the same height and same color. And for, we did that lighthouse, the Tintoral to run, and we landed four fish for the day.
So it was tough.
It was dead. Yeah, it was real tough. It was, yeah, dead as.
Right, so that's a typical what I would expect in those kind of conditions. But even after the rise come through, we had a dead probably 2.5 hours, like real timid bites, not much going on for probably 2.5 hours, 3 hours. And then they started to pick back up in the arvo, whether it was the water temp, warming with the sun and then settling out. But they started biting again. And they were biting way better than we expected. And the water was a bit dirty and it was pumping. So considering that rise comes through, we still caught 25, which is crazy good. And they fed really well before that rise as well. And then you've been back twice since, as the temperature has now come back to a typical summer temp. And you said they were biting like a normal bite, not like what they did on opening those opening 2 days. So what was our discussion since then? What have you been thinking? Like, why did these fish do what they did? Do you think you've worked it out, or we don't know? What are our thoughts around what caused this?
I don't think you can ever be truly sure that you've figured it out. I have a good theory. I think it could be. A lot of the signs are pointing to that. A lot of the fish we caught on that first day and the second day, we noticed a lot of them had teeth marks on them from fighting with other cod, which is something that, yeah, up here we don't see very often at all.
Oh, you don't?
No, generally we don't see fish like that, not with bite marks on them.
Right.
That was something that I haven't experienced. And not every fish. Every fish we caught nearly had teeth marks on it. Since that float, I've obviously done a couple since. We went out, so we did this float the Monday, Tuesday. Logan and I went back down on the Thursday. River heights were a little bit lower than what they were on that Tuesday, but water clarity had improved back to how I like it. And the fishing was okay, nowhere near what it was. I think we got 25 fish for the day.
That's crazy that's okay. That's incredible. But yeah, well, the day we had was stupid good.
Yeah. And then the rivers dropped. It's back down to 1.3 meters. Me and my girlfriend went out yesterday afternoon. We just did a half day float, and I ended up with, I think we landed 7 and probably lost another 3 or 4, which is, yeah, what I would call more of a standard sort of session for a half day session up here. Right. As for why they bit like they did on those first couple of days, I've done a bit of research into water temps and that sort of thing. And I do wonder if it might have been something spawning related, because going back through water temps, the water temp had only just got up to 16 degrees that week before. We had a couple of mid 30 degree days, which really spiked the temp sort of a week to 10 days before we went. And I wonder if that might have been their cue to spawn. So a lot of those fish could have spawned, and either they're still sitting on nests, those bigger fish, or they're just spawned. They haven't fed for a week, and that might have been why they bit as well as they did. I don't know if that's right, but that's sort of the theory I'm thinking. It sort of makes sense to me.
There's no reason for them to chew in a rise, in cold snap, in a poor pyrometer. Like, they shouldn't do that. They shouldn't feed as well as they did. And not only to add to the argument of what we're talking about, we're not sinking lures down into their logs. We're running lures that were shallow running. I run a few deeper diving hard bodies, but I've run them through very quickly. So every fish that bit, and swim baits, had to move. They had to either be in a feed pocket spot and chase it from a feed pocket and fly it to eat it. I think you're right. I think it has to do with spawning, because if it was any other time of the year, they would be sulky. They wouldn't be keen. They wouldn't be happy. 14 degree, it was 14 degree water, and it didn't rise at all during the day. It had just smacked them in the face after 16 and a half degrees. I've had that happen, and the fishing shuts down. Every single session I've done where water temp has dropped 2.5 degrees, especially in like up higher, like 22 to 19's not here nor there, but from 16, which is borderline just warm enough, down to 14, I've done it before and not happy. Like, they are much happier at a higher flow, even a little bit more color, you know, in the water at 16.5 than they are at 14, especially when the 14 just happens. If 14 consistent for 2 weeks, well, then they've got to feed. But I've never, ever, ever, ever seen them happy, and they were beyond happy. So
yeah,
I think you're right. And I think what's happened is it's literally, we timed it to a T, like to the day or 2 days of, or a day. Like, there was probably like a 4 day window, maybe not even. So you're saying the temperature wasn't warm all spring, and then it got warm when, like a week before or a few days before?
That's probably 10 days before opening. We had a week there that was sort of high 20s into the low to mid 30s, which really spiked the water temp. Before that, our water temp was struggling to get above 14 degrees of an afternoon.
Okay, and it got to what? What did it get to?
I think of an afternoon, it was getting up, like higher up, it was getting up towards sort of 17, 18 degrees, and of a morning, it was back down to 15. which is
okay. Yeah, and then it was still warm though. The water temp would have still been doing that up till the day before we got there to set up. Yeah, because the day before was warm, like the day
yeah,
before
we had
traveled there.
Yeah, we'd had a little bit of rain, a few cloudy days, but yeah, nothing. Yeah, the sun was coming out. The water temp was still fluctuating like it normally does. Obviously warmer in the afternoon, cooler in the mornings.
Yeah, so it's either, I'm trying to work out what it was. It's either they spawned, and because when they're spawning, they can be very difficult to catch. We've seen it in the lakes. I'm not sure what happens in the rivers itself. But when they're spawning, they're preoccupied. But post-spawn, same with post-spawn brown trout, super aggressive, stupid, hungry, just eat flat out when they come back from spawn in the winter, the trout. So I can imagine the cod do the same thing. So I wonder if they were all males. Females. Seems strange we call that many and they're all females, but maybe they're all females. They've spawned, done their thing, laid their eggs, and then their job's done. Maybe they're males, but I can't see them being males because males won't chase a lure like we were running. We weren't down in their nests. We weren't down where they would have the nest. So for them to be males to be coming up hitting aggressively doesn't seem right, unless they were males and they'd finished spawning. You know what I mean? Eggs had hatched. Maybe just, yeah. Maybe literally the eggs had all hatched within those few days before. Maybe if there was that 2 weeks of warm weather in November, they spawned, laid their eggs, because they typically do. They typically lay them around a lot of the southern basin fish, lay their eggs. They say they're usually pretty similar. So I don't actually know if water temperatures are completely different somewhere like the Murray, whether they actually still would just lay them anyway. But I think they say they lay them around the Melbourne Cup weekend. So it's around the Melbourne Cup weekend, which is the first one in November. And I think, I don't know how long they stay eggs for. I think it's 2 weeks or something.
Yeah,
but that timeline.
10 days, something like that.
Right. So yep. Possibly what's happened is they were a little bit later than what most of the cod were down here. Let's say they laid them the 15th of November or even a bit later. They had to hold on, wait for that water temp to spike. I imagine this is what happened. Yep. Around the 20th of November, they laid their eggs, or a little bit 18th, whatever it was. They've laid their eggs. They've sat on their nest, right? For the males, this is. The females are done. Males sat on the nest. Eggs have hatched. They're done, job's done, and they literally hatched the day before or 2 days before or the day before, and the fish are that hungry that anything's fair game. It doesn't matter that all these conditions are wrong. I don't care. I've still got to feed. Like, I'm going to die if I don't feed. So then it negates everything, which is also maybe the answer to why they were still chasing lures out in the poor clarity, because any glimmer of what could have been a bait fish, they'd turn and chase and accelerate to eat. Because they were all fat, weren't they?
Yeah, no. Every fish we got was very healthy. They were very well conditioned.
So I wonder if maybe it was their third day of doing it, but they really need to eat the pack on. I don't know. I can't think of anything else. Like, it was phenomenal. It was a stupid, insane bite, hey?
Yeah. Yeah, and whatever that bite was, it's definitely tapered off. It's gone now. That bite's not there anymore. And we're only, 5 days, 7 days after what we fished it. So that bite was, very short and very sharp. They've obviously fed and now they're back into a normal summer pattern.
For anyone listening, I'd love to hear your thoughts if you've ever experienced anything like this on cod opening. Please share, because I would love to hear. But usually that bite would happen in most cases. Northern Basin, they spawn even earlier. So that probably happens through November, and then for here it usually happens probably 10 days before cod opening, but for some reason maybe on the Murray we just lined it up with the poor spring we had. If we had a normal spring, it would have been very different. Because we had a cold spring, I'd be interested to hear if anyone else had a ridiculous bite. The other thing you noticed was a lot of them were bigger fish. So this also brings me to wonder whether it was the spawn that did that, so meaning the bigger fish are the ones that are sexually mature. I think they do sexually mature at like 40 centimeters or something, but they're the ones that more likely, numbers wise, the bigger ones are the ones that were the males guarding the nests. So that's why average size was up. Or if it was the cold water situation, bigger fish don't mind the cold water. They can handle the cold water. We caught very few small fish. We probably caught 4 or 5 under 50 centimeters, maybe.
Yeah, it wouldn't have been any more than that, I don't think. I would have thought our average size between the 65, whatever fish we caught, would have been 60 to 65 centimeters.
Yeah. And a typical summer, when you do a float, like you did yesterday or the day before, typical float of 25 fish, half of them are under 50 usually, like you get a lot of little ones.
Yeah, there's a lot of little ones. Obviously, lure choice makes a big player in that as well. But yeah, generally a lot of little fish. If we sort of 50-50.
Yeah.
What's under and what's over that 50-centimeter mark.
So, yeah, super, super interesting. Something that blew our mind while we're out there. Would have been amazing to just cast all day like you boys did. We still caught a few good fish. We caught some cracking fish that day. Actually, I'm glad it panned out how it was, because one of the fish that ate my lure was over a meter, which is a very rare fish for up in that section. So feel very privileged to have hooked that meter 11. That'll be in the iFish app. We filmed a little video ourselves, which will come out. That was day two when the sun come out, when the rise happened. And you'll just see in that how fast that river is, which is not typical time to fish. It was, you know what, I always not liked fishing at over 1.4 meters. And if it's over 1.4, I wouldn't bother. We started the first day at 1.48. I was like, this is already higher than what I like. And they were happy. If they are super keen, it doesn't matter how swift the river is, but that's not normal, is it? Like, normally they're not going to want to chase out that far to eat.
No, yeah, that's generally they won't. Generally, you'll get them. They will chase, especially if the clarity is still there, but not that consistently and not that aggressive. We had fish that would follow you out to the middle of the river, and then you'd figure eight of them at the side of the boat, and they'd hit a lure another five or six times before they'd hook up. So, yeah.
You've not experienced that normally?
Not normally. It does happen. We do get it happening occasionally, but not that consistently. Not fish coming out four or five times to try and eat the same lure.
So you've caught 70 fish in a day before, though.
Yep.
They fed. That was kind of what that day felt like, or was the difference the size of the fish? Is that the difference? Like, the 70 fish days are when the little ones are smashing things as well. Like, what made for a 70 fish day? You've lined up moon and flows and consistency of flows and clarity and everything, and you get a mixture of bigger and smaller fish.
Yeah, those massive days have of 60, 70 fish, you expect probably 30 of them would be under that 50 centimeter mark. Obviously, if they're feeding that well, you are going to bump into the bigger fish as well. But yeah, the size average is nowhere near what we had for opening.
Right. So you've never caught a good number of fish like 50 in poor conditions ever?
Not in poor conditions, no. If you get everything right, yeah, that's more than doable, but not in poor conditions like we had.
Isn't it crazy to think cod can just decide to do what they want? You know what I mean? Like, oh, well, Brahma's bad. Clarity's bad. Well, not bad, but clarity's not amazing. Water temp's freezing, but oh, well, I need to feed. Like, I just decide to feed. Pain in the ass fish, eh?
They are, anyway. Well, we love chasing them.
Yes. So, anyway, that was a discussion I wanted to have. Not that really helps with trip, but they can help with possibly planning your cod opening trips. Obviously, it was a lot cooler, but possibly, you know, your Victorian cod opening possibly be better than sort of Northern New South Wales cod opening if you can time it with that period where they've finished spawning to the point where it's going to be very difficult to do. And if they were still spawning, you wouldn't catch them. They'd be very difficult to catch. And the way we fished anyway, even if they were still spawning and they were females feeding and the males were still in the nest, we wouldn't have caught any males because we would not. The water was pumping that hard. The nests are all down in the timber, the structure. We weren't even down near them. So it's good to know that we had this amazing bite, but we also didn't affect those fish if they were to be still spawning. I reckon they were done spawning, and I reckon they were feeding, but they were only just done spawning, like just. So really cool. Can you just, while we're still talking about this, let's talk about the trip on the lures that worked. And also, typically, do you have any thoughts on the Upper Murray as to why it is such a consistent fishery? Because I was talking to Dan about it, and you know, one thing I noticed about the Upper Murray, there's no dead water. Like, there's no rivers like it. That there's no dead water. There's no wasted time. There's no wasted spots that fish can't live. Every other river will have banks where you get to it and you're like, well, there's nothing here. There's no structure here. We've got to move on down, 100 meters and then cast again. Have you ever noticed that?
Yeah, that's we do notice. It doesn't really matter where you're fishing. There's always somewhere a fish can be sitting up here. Always going to be a fish sitting where you least expect them. Yeah, we catch fish out of the middle of the rapids up here and sitting in the middle in weird places. And yeah, there'll be anywhere you can imagine a fish will be sitting, there'll be one there on the right day.
And what's the food source? Because they are fatter. They look like impoundment fish. They're fatter than a normal river cod. But yet you've got this cold water situation, and there would be some sort of cold water pollution running down because that water's not warm. Middle of summer, and they get a 14 degree smack in the face. That to me does not sound like a healthy system, but something is right in there because you've not only had a big fish kill that doesn't seem to have impacted anything, the spawning's been phenomenal over the last few years because there's so many small fish in that system. It was obviously stocked a fair bit too, I think, by local clubs back in the day. I don't know how high up they were stocked. I know a fish gets stocked at Jingellic and Wawa, but most of those would be natural fish. They're so fat. There's trout in there. We know they eat trout, yeah?
Yeah, no, we know they eat trout up here. I think that's one of their main favourite food sources up here.
Crays?
Yeah, heaps of crays, especially when you get up into the higher sections. There's thousands of crays. They're everywhere. Yabbies, and obviously you still got your smaller carp and that sort of thing in the system. Yep.
But it hasn't got the little tiny stuff. Like, it hasn't got the little bait, like the shrimp or the little things, because it's just too cold for any of those small things to survive. It's too clear. It's too quick. There's no slack. Well, you know what I mean? There's no shrimp. There'd probably be some sort of microorganisms in there, but the food chain there, I don't know. I don't know why they're so fat. They got fast water to battle. Maybe because the water's so quick, the food comes to them constantly. They don't actually need to ever move to find food, whereas some rivers they might have to move to find food. Maybe because it's so quick and because it's so concentrated, there's a rock wall. Like, they don't have... It's like the rock wall, sit there, don't have to move. Food comes to me because the river's so narrow. Like, maybe it is just the perfect river system. Willows, all that water funnels under those willows. I'm sitting there, I've got the cover I need, I've got the food I need coming to me, rather than sort of slower moving water where they have to move around on their logs to find food. I don't know if you've thought about it. We talked about oxygen as well.
I have thought about it. I've never really been able to figure out why they are so fat. I think part of the reason why there is so many fish in the system is I think our natural recruitment up here is probably equal or better than everywhere else. There's a lot of little feeder creeks and that sort of thing as well that feed into it. I think the willows, I think that does add a fair bit to the river. Just the amount of life and stuff you see in them, stuff falling in the water, the cover, shade, that sort of thing makes a big difference.
Mm. Yeah, you're right. They pull willows out too from most river systems. They're not a native thing, but the cod love them so much and the whole fishery loves them. So I know that they're a pest, and I know there's probably more people who are better educated to talk about it, because I know they're a pest and they destroy bankside vegetation, native stuff, and they're not meant to be there. But from a fish point of view, I don't see any negatives about them at all, except for the fact they suck up a ridiculous amount of water. But in that kind of a river system at the top of a catchment, there's no issue there. They are phenomenal bits of structure. And the whole river is willow and rock. Like, you rarely catch a fish off a heavy fallen red gum or timber log, really. They're in there. The timber's in there. And you do fish it as you float past, and you do catch fish off it. But majority of your fish are willows and rock walls.
Yeah. I'd mean, probably 95% of our fish either come out of the willows or the rock walls. There is obviously big red gums and that have fallen in the river. But yeah, they're sort of few and far between. And as we fish past, we fish them normally, but we don't focus any extra attention on them.
Yeah. So anyway, very consistent, incredible river. The other thing too, like Jordan and I, we don't know. We have to look into it more. I want to have a look at oxygen levels throughout a lot of the rivers throughout the rest of the Murray-Darling Basin. There's only a few water reading places that show your oxygen levels, like most of them don't. But the top one on the Upper Murray at Bringimbrong Bridge shows your oxygen levels. And what I saw with that is it's very high. We're like 9, 10 milligrams per litre. I think that's what it is. Yeah, but it's 10. It's high. Like that's high, highly oxygenated water. Maybe that has something to do with why the fish are in such good condition. Maybe. I'm not sure. I don't know where they feed so well. That fish, obviously, cod love flow. They've always got consistent flow. Incredible. Obviously, the lower sections, when it gets really low, like below Tintail Draw, around the Gingellic Walwa, all the way through to Lake Hume, they have very little flow when it's low. It's just rapids pull, and their pools are almost still. But the fish are still fat. They're still in there. They still feed really well. So, yeah. Do you have anything else to add, mate, on that? The session was crazy, eh? You got...
Yeah. Yeah, no, it was good.
Good fish, good size fish. All the front of the willows, the rock walls produced. They would fly out to eat. Can you tell us you got a 90?
Yeah, 91 or 2, I think it went.
What did it come off?
It was underneath a willow tree. As I think we sort of put it together, all of our biggest fish sort of came off those willows. Obviously, they're a bit better structure for those bigger fish to be holding in. That was, when did I get that? Must have been late on the Monday, late on the first day.
Yep.
Yeah, we were just fishing a willow bank. I was using that B-Well, that Strout swim bait. Sun had actually come out. This was one of the 5 minutes where the sun had come out for the day. Cast into one of the little lanes in the willows, sort of as soon as it hit the flow. It was only a couple of meters off the side of the boat, seeing this fish roll out from underneath the willow tree and smack me swim bait right beside the boat.
That's sick. That's so cool.
Yeah, no, it's good to see him eat.
Swim baits are very cool. We're not going to go into detail on it in this because we'll do another chat and we filmed a video on it and the video pretty much covered it all. We'll do another podcast chat in a few weeks' time on the swim baits. And just how effective they are just because of how lifelike they are. I kind of think of them as like when we chase trout with flies, you can fool the same trout over and over and over again with a fly that looks like a caddis or a mayfly or a nymph because it looks exactly like what they eat. They will make that mistake time and time again. If you've ever noticed, most of our cod lures do not look like what they eat ever at all because most of the time for you to make something that looks like that, it's not snag resistant, it's not effective to fish, it's not easy to fish. So we just don't have them. All your banana style, typical hard bodies, they don't really look like a fish. They have the right profile and the right presence that produces bites from fish. Spinnerbaits look like nothing, but they're super addictive for fish, attractive, and the fish eat them. But if you get a fish throughout its lifetime that eats that time and time again, it becomes, well, it knows what it is, eh?
Yeah, they're a smart fish. They get caught a couple of times on something that's that stands out that much and is that unusual. They are going to learn.
So yeah, you've been using the swim baits with a lot of success up there. I want to see if it can be replicated in every cod waterway. It can definitely be replicated in clear, rocky, gorgy country stuff. I think it could be replicated in the ovens and the midder and any of those tail race style willow tree, rock wall, tail race kind of designed rivers that are clear. But I want to see if it can work in your typical timber systems that have a bit of clarity. No clarity, it's not going to work. But ones that have a bit of clarity, because I think it looks exactly like what they eat. Like it's that realistic that you will catch them time and time again on one because it literally looks like what they're feeding on. You've got one that looks like a trout. Obviously, there's not many waterways where trout and cod overlap, so that suits there. But maybe in those waterways that hold carp, can we get some sort of a carp swim bait? It looks exactly like a carp, swims like a carp, and can we fool big fish on it? That's something I really want to try. But I put a post up in the Upper Murray group on those, on that, and also the Big M's that we were using, which is your high-profile lure, which I think is going to catch a lot of fish. Is that what you used the other day? Did you stick with the Big M when you went for the session last night?
Yeah, yesterday I did, yeah. That's what I put all my fish on yesterday.
Yeah. You said you caught fish mostly on the swim baits and a little bit on the Big M's. Is this the most you've used the Big M's?
Yeah, probably. It's not that we don't catch fish on the Big M's last year consistently. It's just... Well, you experience a swim bait bite. I just love doing it. There's no better way to catch them than on a swim bait in the clear water. So that's sort of just what I stuck with.
Yeah. The the hard body, the BM's live fish in the hard body is very easy to fish. Yeah. It's just cast the mind. Yeah. Swim bait, you have to think a little bit more about where you're putting it with timber. Like the BM, you just cast it mind and bash it over the timber. But the swim bait's very, very cool. Something I never expected to see as a lure that would stand out well above all others, especially in a flowing system. Yes, in a still gorge rocky system, but to see how far they would travel to eat that is crazy. And we've got a video coming out on that. We'll have more chats on that. But this chat was more about this Upper Murray float and why they fed the way they did, which I found fascinating and we just had to share. Caught a heap of fish, all your typical feeding spots. You'll see what we did in this video coming up, whether you're interested in the swim baits and the Big M style fishing or the Upper Murray on its own. I did a video last year on the Upper Murray as well, which you can see very contradictory sort of sessions. That one where you spinner baits a lot and caught a lot. This one here is swim baits and Big M's. And yeah, we caught some cracking fish. Amazing fish. So thanks for jumping on, mate, and chatting about that. I don't know if it's something you can really replicate anywhere else. It has to be the spawning thing.
Yeah. I don't know how you replicate that again, how you manage to line everything up to get the fish at the exact same, biting at the exact right time after spawning. I think we were just lucky and sort of got it when it all happened at once. Yeah. I don't know if it's something you can replicate, but like everything, it's something new we've learnt. And yeah, it might help us one day down the track.
Did the fish still have teeth marks on them this week?
No, most of them had healed. They had old teeth marks, but yeah, no fresh ones like they did on the Monday.
Really? Yeah. You're kidding?
No. Because I did look at them because I did wonder. But yeah, they had old ones, but no fresh ones.
I wonder how quick they heal. I do notice that you don't see them with teeth marks in April. Like, it's not something you always notice, and you normally only notice it in the impoundments. You know what I mean? Like, you see them bite, and I think some of those teeth marks would scar. Like, some of them would scar, but obviously most of them are just surface scratches that heal.
Yeah, no, they definitely weren't. Like, there was no... We were catching them on Monday, and they were still... Like, that only just happened. They were still white and hadn't started to scar over. But yeah, I caught a couple of fish yesterday that had old teeth marks on them, but they were definitely starting to heal.
Well, they faded, are they?
Yeah, they started to fade and they started to go back to their green colour. Sort of that, that scary colour they get on them.
Well, that big one I caught, the meter 11, I don't know, I think I told you, it had a big bottom jaw up near its top dorsal fin. It had a big bottom jaw mark, and then where the top jaw mark was from a fish biting it, it managed to grab its dorsal fin, and it must have grabbed it from front on, and it's like it tore its dorsal fin back, like hyperextended it and like opened up in its dorsal fin. It was real fleshy and it was fresh. It wasn't all that old. So if they still got teeth marks, I wonder if they were a week old, you know, and now they're just another week old, so they're healing, or maybe they were still, spawning. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how quick that something like that would heal on them, but yeah, you'd definitely notice they were nowhere near as fresh as what they were.
Be interesting to see what happens going forward. You know what makes me want to do is the next cold snap we get, full overcast day that's wet and cool that's in this summer period, go for a session and see how much it sucks or if it's actually good. Chances are it's going to suck, but it'd be good to test it, the theory, on the same river with another cold snap. I don't think we're going to get one now that summer's here, but we did say that all spring. We got 4 or 5. Interesting. Be interesting to see. Was it the cloudy? Could we replicate it? But it probably won't be cold again. Chances are it would not be good. So.
I would try and avoid fishing a session like that for the remainder of the summer.
Yeah. Cool. Thanks, mate, for the chat. Thanks for sharing. It was fascinating. I don't think I'll ever experience a session like it, so I feel very lucky that we went and did it. If it had a change like that 2 days before, we probably would have gone to a different spot because Jordan texted me and said, what's the backup plan? Where else are we going? Because we weren't sure we were actually going to go there. And then it turned into the best session ever. So keep an eye out for the video. It's not specific to the Upper Murray. It's specific to the swim baits and the Big M's. The Big M's you can use anywhere. Swim baits, bear with us. I reckon you could use them anywhere, but we've got to try it because we've done a few sessions. I've tried it. Jordan's tried it on places like the Bidgee without success, but maybe it needs a bit more time to work it out. But yeah, this video is very cool. So thanks, mate. And I'll talk to you in another chat soon.
No worries. Thank you. Good to be part of the session.